Coming up on Golf Today, oh, captain, my captain, former world number one and active player Stacey Lewis tabbed to be the next U.S. Solheim Cup captain. Why is now the right time, and will she play on the team? And the world number one ASU alum John Rahm headlines the field of the WM. He will have the gallery on his side, but can he kick down the door for the first time in 2022? And the always entertaining, always loud par 3 16th hole, we look back at the wild and woolly and tender moments that have defined the WM Phoenix Open as Golf Today revs up now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And welcome into Golf Today. Defending champion Brooks Koepka getting his pro-am licks in one day before the start of his title defense. Hard to see if he's still a blonde underneath that tight black cap. We know one thing, he's a two-time winner, 2015 and, of course, 2021 as well. Man, another day dawns at golf's biggest party. Golf shots and goofiness, birdies and bro hugs, costumes and sometimes controversy all add to the wonderful tapestry that is the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale and the WM Phoenix Open. Welcome to our perch above the 16th hole. Damon Hack alongside Rex Hoggart, and we have some news for you on this Wednesday from the women's game. Stacey Lewis, a former world number one, a two-time major champ, 13-time winner on the LPGA Tour, has been named the 2023 U.S. Solheim Cup captain. 36-year-old will lead Team USA next year at Finca Cortesan in Spain. Lewis follows in the footsteps of Pat Hurst, who captained last year at Inverness, and Julie Inkster, who captained the previous three Solheim Cups. Here's a look at Stacey's resume, and it is a strong one. You see the two-time major champs. She won the Chevron in 2011, won the 2013 Women's Open, birding the 17th and 18th in that final round at the Old Course. 13 wins, two-time Rolex Player of the Year, spent 25 weeks at world number one, four Solheim Cup appearances as a player in 2011, 13, 15, and 17. And Captain Stacey Lewis joins us right now. Stacey, first of all, congratulations. You're an active player. You're a winning player as recently as a year and a half ago. How did this all come together, and why is this the right time now?
Well, it really probably started after Inverness. You know, I know my name was being thrown around the mix. The tour actually called me in December and asked if I'd be interested, and I said, you know, of course. You know, who wouldn't want to be Solheim Cup captain? And you know, then I got a call. It was the first week of January from our commissioner, Molly, and she offered me the role. And I immediately said yes, got the support of my family, and we've been off and running ever since. But I've had to keep it a secret now for about a month, so it's been killing me.
Now, you've played for three different captains. I'm curious, which of their styles will you take into the job?
It's a little bit of all of them. You know, I think you learn a little bit from all of your experiences. You know, Julie, really, I learned a lot from her. You know, she had me involved in Germany and helping with pairings, and was always picking my ear about who I thought what could play well together, just because I knew people so well. You know, I think you take some of the a little bit of the pod system that they've used and try to modify it to be a little bit more flexible. You know, but I do think there's a lot of things we've done right in the past few years, and we haven't won. But I do think there are some things that we can do better and try to make it a better experience for the players.
Now, the Stacey Lewis I know is a fighter, a grinder, a baller, a player, a 13-time winner, former world number one, two-time major champ, four-time player in the Solheim Cup. Under any scenario, would you consider being a playing captain, considering how well you're still playing?
You know, the last 2 weeks have kind of changed my thought on it a little bit. You know, I immediately said, no, I'm not going to play. But if it comes down to it, you know, it's the middle of next summer and my name is still in the mix, and I'm one of the best 12, and that is our best team that needs to go out there and play, then I'll play and I'll be a captain. And if I'm not, then I will just be a captain and I will be perfectly fine doing that too. So, you know, it's a long ways from now. You know, we've got a lot of time, you know, but I'm going to continue playing. You know, I feel like I'm still, my game's in a really good spot, and we'll kind of just see what happens over the next year or so.
You have played in a Solheim Cup overseas. What are the specific challenges as a captain that go into playing an overseas Solheim Cup?
It's very different. There's some aspects that I believe are a little bit easier as far as, you know, there's not quite as many people around you. It's a more intimate team experience. But it's also the crowd will definitely not be on your side. You know, you go over there trying to silence the crowd. So it has its challenges, but I also see it as a good thing, especially for some of our younger players that haven't won. I think it's a little bit easier than playing in the U.S. where, you know, you have a ton of fans, a ton of family, and a lot of demands that they can just go over there and play golf.
Going back to the last Solheim Cup, which the U.S. lost, what are the lessons from Inverness that you can use going into next year?
There's a lot. You know, I think, one is that it's close. You know, I don't think we need to completely reinvent the wheel. I think we're really close. It's our players. You know, I think I want them to be in contention more opportunities to win golf tournaments. Just feeling that pressure, because the Solheim Cup is such intense pressure. I mean, it's the most they'll ever feel on the golf course. And some players, like myself, I never really quite figured it out as a player. But I want to help these players figure it out. I want to make the environment looser. I want them to have fun. I want it to be, you know, off the golf course. I want them, you know, acting like 20-year-olds and being kids and being goofy and being silly. And, where fun is at the top of my list as far as what I want to accomplish at the next Solheim Cup.
Now, Stacey, in 2024, the Solheim Cup goes back to an even year. So that means 2023 and 2024. Have you been told that you will be the captain for both 2023 and 2024?
No, we've just discussed 23, and I think that's good. I don't think you need to name another captain until after we play 23. I don't think we'll do that, but we're also about this time next year, we'll probably be doing uniforms and getting some things ready for 24, whether I'm captain or not. So I don't know. It'll kind of be determined with how things go in 23, but, if the opportunity is there, I can't say I would for sure do it, but I would definitely throw my name in the mix again.
Stacey, we were talking this morning about the emotions of the 2019 Solheim Cup, which you were forced to withdraw from because of back mm-hmm. issues. What do you imagine the emotions are going to be like as a captain? And I just think back to last year, and Steve Stricker kind of had a hard time keeping a lid on his emotions. Have you put any thought into what it might be like?
I really haven't. I'll tell you this. I went to Inverness, it was hard not playing in Scotland, but honestly not getting picked for Inverness was probably worse. I was born in Toledo. My parents are from Toledo. You know, it just kind of felt like I was going to play there, and then I didn't get the opportunity, but I still went there as a captain because I felt like my team needed me, and I had the most fun I've ever had at a Solheim Cup. Just being able to be looser, to not stressing so much about the golf. It was probably the best Solheim Cup I've ever had. So I expect Spain to kind of be on a similar path of, I get to kind of worry about all the other small stuff and then just worry about having fun and enjoying the week and, celebrating these players and making sure they understand what an honor it is that that they get to be one of 12 and how many little girls that they have looking up to them, hoping to be them one day.
As you open this new chapter, Stacey, you're already living in a new chapter as a mom. How do you think being a mother might inform your captaincy in a different way if you weren't a mom?
I mean, you could ask a lot of people around me. I'm a different person than I was 3 years ago. I don't let things get to me as easily. I'm more organized. I kind of compartmentalize things. And, if I'm on the golf course, it's golf. And if I'm off, it's doing stuff with my family or whatever else it is. And, just really knowing how to handle emotions and how to relate to the players. And, my husband's a college golf coach, and I see him interact with his girls and how he handles things on his team. And I think, I think I can learn from that too. So, I've been fortunate. I have a lot of great coaches in my life, and I'm going to lean on them as well.
you just mentioned not getting picked for the last Sohan Cup team. Most captains will tell you making that phone call, either for a player who has been picked or hasn't been picked, is the hardest part of the job. Any thought of how you're going to handle that?
It is hard, and I've been on both sides. I got picked by Julie for Scotland, and I didn't get picked last year. So I know what that's like on both sides of it. And, you know, my biggest thing is with whether it's with the girls that make the team or whether the ones that don't, there's going to be a lot of communication. They're going to know what's going on. I don't want things to be a secret. They're going to know where they stand. And I'll call as many people as I need to call. You know, and even if I have to tell 15 people that they're not going to get picked, I think, you know, they at least deserve that phone call. And so, and encouraging them to go make the team for the next one too. That's what a lot of those phone calls are about. It's not about that team this year. It's about 24, 26 down the road. You know, they're going to be those players on those teams. And so it's just encouraging them to keep working hard and make the next one.
Well, Stacey, you have long represented this game and the red, white, and blue with class and toughness. Congratulations on this wonderful honor.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much.
And I tell you, Stacey and the Americans have some work to do after long dominating this series. You see that Europe has won the last 2-4 out of the last 6. But you see also how close it was in 2019 and 2021. Tough, tough losses for the Americans. For more, we bring in Paige McKenzie. Paige, I know you know Stacey Lewis very well. Your reaction, first of all, to her being named captain?
Obviously, I think it's a great selection. Hearing her talk, you can understand the leadership that she brings to the team. I will say that it's a little bit surprising, but probably the least controversial pick, just based on her age. I say surprising because she still is young. She still is competing. When you look at what she's done so far this season, and even over the last couple of years, I mean, she's the 9th-ranked player in the world for the United States team. Based on world ranking, she's 4th currently on the Solheim points list based on her play so far this season. So she's very much in the mix for making this team. So that's the only reason why I would say it's surprising, because it's definitely not controversial. She's a tremendous leader and brings a ton of experience into the team room.
I wanted to follow up on that. And can you talk about how difficult that would be or what the challenges would be of her having to be a playing captain? We saw Tiger Woods do it a few years ago at the President's Cup, but it elevates things to a next level.
It certainly does. And I think with Tiger Woods, he leaned on the assistant captains to help take on a bigger role while he was playing. And I think that's obviously going to be an important factor when she considers who she wants to be in the roles of assistant captain for that week. And I think Stacey Lewis, she's known as one of the most thoughtful people on the LPGA Tour. She's definitely not the loudest voice in the room, but I would say she's the most heard voice in the room because everyone listens when she talks. She's extremely well respected because she is so thoughtful on issues. It's no coincidence that a lot of her individual sponsors have then become title sponsors on the LPGA. It's because she is an incredible voice and ambassador for the game and for the LPGA Tour. So she's going to bring that kind of wisdom into the team room, and no doubt she's going to put people around her that also hold those values to be true too.
Paige, I'm fascinated by the arc of her career. She was a young woman who battled scoliosis, had to wear a back brace for most of the day. She won as an amateur unofficially on the LPGA Tour. The event didn't end up playing out because of the weather. When did you first become aware of Stacey Lewis in terms of her ability as a player and this toughness that we talk about daily with her?
Wow, we're taking me way back. I played the NCAA championship with her the year after she came back from the scoliosis medical year. And I had just come off a medical year as well for my back. So we immediately bonded over that. And I've always respected many things about Stacey Lewis, but her staying in college, finishing her college degree career, and then always having, like I said, a humble leadership quality about her. The game was there. And I saw that from the first day that I watched her play. She's always been a great ball striker and a patient player on the golf course. I would say even more patient, as she said, since she's been a mom, because that certainly creates a different level in yourself, and I'm sure she's translated that into the golf course well. But yeah, I mean, I've known Stacy for a very long time, and she's always had a tremendous grit. And I think you're right. The challenges that she's overcome personally and physically, I'm sure, have contributed to that, her skill level on the golf course.
We talk about players' captains all the time, and it seems to me she is going to lean into a player's captain. How do you envision her leadership style?
I think it's great. What she was talking about is how Julie and Pat have leaned on her just because she's so well connected with the players. I think she's going to bring a great awareness of her players. And that, I think, is going to be very valuable as it relates to matching up partnerships and in learning to read each player in those situations. When you've got a player that may be down a little bit because of a bad match, I think she'll be in tune enough with those personalities to be able to say what she needs to say to get the best and most out of her players. I think players trust her, so if there is natural pairings or partnerships, they'll be able to come to Stacy and say, this is who I think I would be good to play with or partner with. That kind of depth of knowledge and trust amongst the players in the locker room, I think, is going to serve her well. And it's certainly something that we just haven't seen before in most recent history. Julie and Pat, not far removed from playing full time. Julie was still active on the LPGA Tour when she was captain, but not to the level that Stacy Lewis is, and not so recently that Stacy Lewis has been in the team room as a player, as a competitor.
How tough a job do you think it is for Stacy Lewis? Because the battle has been joined for the life of this series. The Americans have been dominant, but Europe has won two in a row and four of the last six. So how difficult a job does Stacy Lewis have ahead, especially on the road?
Yeah, and I actually think that might have something to do with the timing of her captaincy, that the United States, when they chose and when the committee selected her, this is speculation on my part, but that they wanted a strong leader. They didn't want a controversial captain's pick or captain to be picked. They wanted somebody that everybody believed in to try to turn this around for the United States team. I actually think that specifically might be why this made sense to put Stacy in the role now.
Huge day in the women's game. Stacy Lewis, the new United States Solheim captain. We appreciate the perspective of Paige McKenzie. And as you can imagine, a lot of reaction on social media as well. Our own Grant Boone, Stacy, as Bedford Falls, Peter Bailey said about his son George, was born older. Tough times made her a tough customer, but she has turned into a wonderful life. This is such a good choice. And Grant Boone always has terrific perspective. Yeah, Stacy focused and ready, but she was an assistant captain for the 2021 U.S. team, suffered a loss to the Europeans for the fourth time in six editions. The visiting side, now winners of back-to-back cups, built a two-point lead, entering singles for closing out that 15-13 victory with a 6-6 single split at Inverness Club on the final day. And you see, I mean, this is a series that has gone mostly the American way throughout the history of the Solheim Cup, but not of late. Four of the last six Team Europe, including back-to-back 2019 and 2021. But Rex Hodges, you see someone in Stacy Lewis who sounds so composed, who looks so composed, who has grown up in the Solheim Cup era and knows what's at stake next year.
I think Paige said it best earlier in the show when she screamed leadership, and that's what you feel when you talk to her about this. I don't know if Stacy has the answers going forward to turn this around. It's only been two losses. I mean, certainly on the Ryder Cup side, we could talk about much more odds than that, but she seems like she's the right person for the job. I love the fact that Beth Ann Nichols at Golf Week wrote a great story this morning about it, and she said that Julie Inkster, who was on the selection committee, sent her a message that you are ready for this.
Wow. What do you see, Jaime, in this player? I mean, this is someone who she had scoliosis as a young person, you know, had to wear back brace during the formative years, you know, when you're junior high and high school and you're trying to look good and be cool. And she's someone who's had to live through toughness and tough times.
I sense perspective, you know, even in the comment, you know, I want these guys to be kids. She's not imposing that, you know, we're going to make this, you know,
my way or the highway.
Real sergeant. Yeah, no, it's just like, no, have fun. Because I played the tour a long time. I'm speaking as Stacy would speak, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe I didn't have enough fun because I grinded so hard. And you got a lot out of it. But you can tell later in career, you know, it's like, geez, I was so lucky to do this. Did I enjoy it enough? And I think she wants this to be an enjoyable experience. And I think Steve Stricker wanted the same thing. I think that's the best formula for captains, is make it a fun experience. Don't make it, you know, a pressure cooker, because there's enough of that.
Yeah.
You know, they got enough self-imposed pressure. And I think that's why the Solheim Cup is so difficult for the Americans. They're expected to win, just as the Americans are expected to win the Ryder Cup. It's always a little extra pressure to me than what Europe carries.
Yeah.
And so lessen that and make it something that, yes, I am fiery, and you're going to see my example, and I'll mentor you, and I'll be, you know, the voice of experience, and I'm still young enough to relate to you. So let's make this, you know, let's make this something we look back on and say, boy, that was the greatest week of my life.
Talk a lot about the strength of the Korda sisters, Danielle Kang, but the Europeans have become a very, very tough out, the likes of Leona Maguire and Celine Boutier for the Europeans. That's going to be a tough job and a tough task for Stacey and the Americans.
And I loved her answer when you talk about what are the unique challenges of going overseas and trying to win an away game. We've seen it on both sides with the Ryder Cup and the Solheim Cup. I love the fact that she is turning it into a positive, saying that maybe it's a good thing that we don't have all the home distractions. And you look at where the U.S. Solheim Cup team is right now, and again, I will compare it to the Ryder Cup. She feels like a one-person task force. Mm. She comes in with a lot of ideas and a lot of background.
Yeah, combing through social media, it's been almost 100% positive for Stacey Lewis. A very, very strong choice for the U.S. Solheim Cup team. Speaking of strong, how about the strength of the field this week here at the WM Phoenix Open? Three of the top four players in the world, John Rahm, ASU, Victor Hovland, OSU, Patrick Cantlay, UCLA, 6 of the top 10 in the world, 15 of the top 20. Every winner of this event since 2015 is present. It's become an event that the players check on their calendar. They want to be here. And I mentioned Victor Hovland making his first start since winning the Dubai Desert Classic at the end of January. Victory, his second win on the DP World Tour, his third win, his last five worldwide starts. He now sits at number 3 in the world, and he's doing it kind of a different way. I mean, this is someone who's now belongs in the conversation of us against the field, and we have that with PointsBet. The field versus John Rahm, JT, Victor Hovland, and Hideki Matsuyama. So it's three major championship winners, and there's Victor Hovland right alongside. Very, very strong respect for this young player, but this is someone, let's be honest, the ball striking's fantastic. Strokes gained around the green is north of 200. Yeah. How is he doing this?
Well, he's doing it with attitude, you know, because I think he is getting better as a chipper, and one reason he is because he didn't let that terrible, really, weakness in his game get him down. And he's worked with Jeff Smith in Las Vegas for about the last year. They're poker buddies. They talk about the whole game. They talk about the short game. He's learned a better technique. He's a great learner. He learned from the internet, from YouTube. He knows how to process information and how to change it quickly. He doesn't stress out. He's not down on himself. Yeah, he's given away some tournaments probably because he probably has double chipped a couple of holes. And it's still there, but it's getting better. And he's got the right attitude to take the long game, the long view of it. At the same time, I think it's happening quickly. We're seeing him win. We're seeing him.
Yeah.
He's making some great shots under pressure in the sand, in the bunkers, around the green. He knows how to do it. It's just a matter of making it second nature. Probably when he grew up in Norway, probably not a lot, you know, a lot of indoor golf and hitting full shots, probably not a lot of short game shots. So just a matter of development more than anything, I think.
We talked about it this morning when he first came up. He is always smiling. He always seems to be having a good time. But I've looked at what he's done really in the last just couple of months. And as they would say, going into the big game this week, there's a dude behind that smile because he's going to come at you and he's going to come at you with firepower. I look what he's done in his last two wins, essentially going back to the Hero last year and then just a couple weeks ago in Dubai. He started the final round of both of those events 6 strokes back. In Dubai, he finishes birdie, eagle, birdie. That is firepower. When you can step to the first tee, and regardless of how far back I am, I'm going to make a run. I love that attitude out of him. And I'll go back to the Ryder Cup. He didn't have a great Ryder Cup. He went 0-2-2. For a young player, that could have left some scar tissue, but he's only won 3 times around the globe since then and moved to number 3 in the world. Proven he's a world-class player.
Yeah, 0-3-2 and still kind of walked away with a smile on his face. And listen, I watched him closely at the Hero, and I watched in particular the shot tracker. Mm-hmm. Off the tee, he's elite, Jaime. And this is someone who, I guess, can win with his great ball striking. He was negative strokes gained around the green when he won in Dubai. So is this a case where his ball striking is so superior? Mm. Not a lot of curve to his shots that he's able to make up for those lost shots around the green.
Well, it is superior. What you want it to maximize it.
Okay.
You know, certainly, that's why he's starting to win, because he's starting to, you know, get past that weakness and let the strength speak for itself. It's an easy golf course from where Victor Hovland usually plays. He's so straight. I mean, he's quite long. He's 10th in total driving, but and he hits it far enough. You know, I think, he's 28th in distance, not bad, 307.
Fantastic.
But he's like 7th in accuracy.
Yeah.
So that's where you can be an aggressive, you know, an aggressive power player. Most power players have to play for the miss, you know, bomb and gouge. He plays down the middle. That's really special. And I think it's always going to put him in good stead as a dangerous player when he gets it going, because he's going to be hitting, you know, shots with a great golf swing from the fairway, and he starts knocking it stiff on these birdie runs that happen that can be really explosive.
Yeah, and I love how you talked about the attitude, because he just seems to go through life, you know, smiling, sashaying, pokes fun at himself from time to time, and still finds a way to get the W around the world. Well, as you can hear, the music is ramping up. It's getting a little bit louder. That might be because we have the defending champ on the tee here at 16. This is just awesome. This venue here, this stadium, some have said it's the stadium that Tiger Woods built because of the ace he made back in 1997.
I think some of these roars are still from that ace when you go back and listen to that celebration.
Oh, it's great to see Brooks healthy. And you know he wants to have a big 2022. And considering what happened last year, went to the Masters trying to rehab his way through preparation, missed the cut, was absolutely devastated, a bit angry, having to answer some questions about how he felt about going home on a Friday. He said, how do you think I felt, with a few expletives thrown in as well.
And Ryan Lavner and I talked about this on the Golf Central podcast last night, about if you look at his record, and look, this got brought up yesterday about your level of concern. I'm not concerned until we get to April, but you look at the success he's had in this event, and I think he's had that success because of this crowd. He loves the big moment. He loves being in major championships, and he loves this arena.
Yeah, I tell you what, he loves mixing it up with the likes of Larry Fitzgerald, Aaron Rodgers. He believes he's of that ilk, that he is a front page, bold face type, above the fold, put him in lights, that he believes he belongs with the best players, not just in golf, Jaime, but in sports.
Absolutely, and I see that there. I think this week is really an enthusiastic week for him. He's among his guys here. He's a jock. He's a guy who thinks, you know, I'm a tough athlete. And, you know, he's been accused of not having the motivation for regular tour events. He's won here, and I don't think it was an accident. I think he's up for this one. And not only that, situationally, it's important right now that he reestablish himself. I know everybody says, hey, wait for the majors, and here comes Brooks. But he's got to show the groundwork for that first, and this is a good place to do it.
Yeah, and he's doing it in an era where Jon Rahm is consistent week after week. Right. If Brooks Koepka wants to get back to number one in the world, he's going to have to play better week to week, because Jon Rahm is consistent, and Victor Hovland is consistent, and Colin Morikawa is consistent.
When he has had the success he's had in the majors, and I know we're going to talk about he is kind of far away from his last victory. However, I would still say I have a hard time second-guessing the formula. Whatever it is that makes him special in those biggest events, and to Jaime's point, I get it. Maybe he needs to get it done more on a week-in and week-out basis. But, man, when you look at that resume, I still have a hard time second-guessing
him. The resume is awesome, but short-term, it hasn't been great.
Yeah.
He's had a fall-off in majors as well. He's got to start playing better golf, seriously. I mean, that's what's going to get him there. It's not going to be, yeah, I got to wait for my moment, and everything will click in. It doesn't click in automatically if you haven't been playing good going into these things.
Man, he made it look so easy for that stretch from 2017 to 2019. Basically told us how he goes about his business, what he thinks of his peers. You know, calling out Dustin Johnson specifically. Remember that PGA at Harding Park? Oh, well, he's got one major, which he had at the time. I got four of these. I mean, he is not afraid to be vocal, to be confrontational. I think he relished that match with Bryson DeChambeau as much as almost any win he's ever had. He loved that. He loved taking apart Bryson DeChambeau. He wanted to embarrass him, Rex, and you know I'm right.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm not going to debate that one way or the other. What I am going to point out is he is an assassin on social media. We saw what happened between he and Bryson last year. I just want to point it out. He called out Phil last week because of what was going on and the greed comment. You notice Phil didn't come back after him. He knows when he's outmatched on social media.
Yeah, especially now that Brooks looks like a Bond villain with that new blonde hair. Well, 16 is going to be a lot of fun this week, as we all know. Let's take a look at the GIR performance, greens in regulation. Yeah, it's not that tough of a green to hit, except for the noise and I guess the fear of embarrassment if you miss this green.
Yeah, no, it's in the middle of the green. You get booed for middle of the green here, though. They want you to shoot in the pit. So that's where the players have to stay with it themselves and just play their game. But it's tempting here to try to do something spectacular.
on Golf Today. On Tuesday, the PGA Tour announced that DJ Gregory, who was born with cerebral palsy and has walked over 14,000 miles and 42,000 holes at PGA Tour events since 2008 in support of his Walking for Kids Foundation, has been named the recipient of the PGA Tour Courage Award. The PGA Tour Courage Award is presented to a person who, through courage and perseverance, has overcome extraordinary adversity, such as a personal tragedy or debilitating injury or illness, to make a significant and meaningful contribution to the game of golf. You see past recipients, Eric Compton, two-time heart transplant recipient. We've been talking about Gerald Lyle. We lost him to leukemia. We've had Gene Sowers on this program. Morgan Hoffman been in the news, living a Spartan life in Costa Rica as he battles muscular dystrophy. Daniel Rappaport wrote a fantastic piece for Golf Digest. And recently, John Rahm, the world number one, talked about the courage of DJ Gregory.
I say this on behalf of every player, that it's a true honor to have you every time we're walking the course and every time we're donating for your cause. For people that don't know, I won the U.S. Open with him walking with me. He's walking with me this week. And because of your courage and what you stand for, I will also be matching their $25,000 on top of whatever happens this week. So let's hope you get to that 2 million mark even quicker than this
one.
Tell you what, these players on the PGA Tour, they know DJ Gregory. Here's Ryan Palmer. So great. DJ is the man. You're the best DJ. Walking for Kids. See you in LA. I mean, this is a hard guy to book. Everybody wants DJ in his group. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thanks
so much
for joining us. What's your
Absolutely.
Reaction to this incredible award?
I was in shock yesterday. I had no idea. All I was told was to be on property on Tuesday around lunchtime. So I had no idea. I was speechless.
Now you look at the names on that award, and of course Gerald Lyle immediately comes to mind. What does this mean to you?
It's pretty awesome. Like it's interesting because I don't ever like think about how I've inspired people as I'm going through it, because I mean, I just, you know, try to think about this week and only this week, because I want to give all my energy to this tournament and to John Rahm this week. So I don't ever look ahead, because I don't want to shortchange each week. But I know when I decide to stop, when I have a chance to look back on it, then I'll realize what I've been able to accomplish.
DJ, the players love you. They love seeing you at golf tournaments in their group. But how did you get started? We know you've walked 14,000 miles, but what was that first mile like?
The first tournament of the year is the Century Tournament Champions at Kapalua, and that's not the easiest golf course to walk. So it was not, I mean, at least you get the hardest course to walk out of the way the first week of the year. So that's good. But I've been there 15 times, and I've only fallen one time there, so that's pretty good.
I think that's better than me. I think I've been down a couple of those hills a few times, DJ. I've seen you at tour events pretty much my entire career, and I've always wanted to ask you, what's the most difficult walk on tour, and what's the best walk?
Well, the most difficult walk by far is the plantation course at Kapalua.
Okay.
I mean, that's in a category by itself. My favorite walk on tour actually is probably Pebble Beach, not because of the golf course, but because of the views around the golf course. Even on a cloudy, rainy day, the views of the rocks and on the ocean is pretty awesome.
You're giving back so much with your Walking for Kids Foundation. The players get a lot from you being in their group. What do you get by doing this?
The one thing I take away most from what I do is the friendships and relationships I have with the players, their caddies, their families, and the staff of the PGA Tour. It's amazing. I mean, the money, what we raise, and how we're trying to help kids achieve their goals and dreams, that's pretty awesome. But what I take away most are the friendships and the relationships, because they don't just look out for me the weeks that I follow them. They look out for me every day of the year.
Now, we just heard John Rahm say that you were with him last year at Torrey Pines for that U.S. Open victory.
Yep.
How many times has that happened? I know that's not the only time.
That's 8 wins total, 2 major championships.
Oh, my gosh. That's a Hall of Fame career, DJ.
We'll see.
That's fantastic. Now, how did the idea begin? in. Do you remember the conversations? Like, what prompted you to say, I want to walk with PGA Tour players at events?
Well, you know, I've been a sports fan all my life. I love all sports, but golf is my favorite because I can play it, although I don't play it very well. Just ask Bryce Garnett or Ricky Fowler. But I suck at golf, but I love it. And I always wanted to go to every PGA Tour event and be able to walk every hole. And then also, I wanted to get to know the players on a more personal level than their scorecards and their stats. So I did a little research to find out how much it would cost, if it was something that was actually an option to do. And then I put a proposal together, and I gave it to Jim Nantz. And he read it, and he's like, have you ever thought about getting the PGA Tour involved? And I was like, no, not really. And he goes, you need to send this to the commissioner. And I was like, how's the commissioner of a major sport going to get what I send him? Doesn't he have his mail screened? And he goes, because you're going to send me the proposal, and I'm going to hand deliver it to the tour. Wow. And that's what happened. And then a month later, we met at headquarters, and they jumped on board immediately. Their only concern was if I could do it 2 weeks in a row. So in 2007, they made me do two back-to-back tournaments to make sure I was able to walk 2 weeks in a row. So we did the Barclays and the Deutsche Bank Championship. And then once I've successfully accomplished that, they let me do every event in 2008.
You mentioned it right off the bat. How much longer do you want to do this?
Six more years after this year.
You got it. Six more years. Why is that?
I think at age 50 is a good stopping point. And it also gives me a chance to kind of have a plan in place for what I want to do after I finish walking. You know, I definitely want to work something in sports, hopefully in golf. I'm so used to traveling so much and being in a different spot every 5 or 6 days that I won't be able to do a 9-to-5 or office job.
As a boy, you were told you would never walk. What's your message to the folks maybe struggling at home watching?
100%. It's, you know, if you have a dream, go after it. Don't let anybody tell you can't do something, because through hard work, anything is possible.
DJ, you're an inspiration. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Winning the PGA Tour Courage Award. First non-player.
I honestly did not know that until Jay Monahan said that yesterday, and that's pretty awesome.
And it's well-earned. DJ Gregory,
thanks
for your time on this Wednesday. And congratulations. So many great stories here at the WM Phoenix Open. When we return, Charles Howell III. I imagine DJ's walk with Charles Howell III somewhere along the way. This week, 600th start on the PGA Tour. We'll hear from him after the break.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And Cobra LTDX drivers, engineered for the longest total distance. And by WM, who is always working for a sustainable tomorrow. Learn more at WM.com. Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Back on Golf Today. This week is more than just a normal tour stop for 42-year-old Charles Howell III. Marks a huge milestone in his career. 600 tour starts. So we thought it'd be cool to do a little Charles Howell appreciation. Lots to appreciate about Chucky Three Sticks. This is someone who's kind of been there, done that. Three wins, 16 runner-up finishes. You see the starts, making 600 start this week. Only Brian Gaze made more starts in that span with 608. $41.3 million earned. Good for 22nd all-time. And earlier today, Howell met the media.
Yeah, I was 7 years old when I started playing golf in Augusta, Georgia. And what a easy place to play golf. Golf was cool in Augusta because of this little event called the Masters. And my dream was to play the PGA Tour. Yeah, I was never, I never dreamt about, I want to be the best player in the world. I just want to play golf on the PGA Tour. And you referenced my first event. So I was paired with Hugh Royer and Jumbo Elliott. that's dating myself here. And, I bogeyed the first two holes, as Andy reminded me. So nervous at 17, and we shot 80. But I mean, just the whole PGA Tour. I've watched the organization grow from obviously former Commissioner Tim Fincham now to Jay Monahan, that have just done an unbelievable job. I watched Jay come in being commissioner, and then the COVID pandemic hit, and what he had to weather from the very start of this deal. And my gosh, I can't say enough about the tour. The other players have become really my life and family. You know, we're always out here. I want to beat this guy and beat that guy, and you do. But at the end of the day, I look back and it's been my life for 22 years. They've been, you know, they've become friends. I mean, I've got their cell phone numbers in my cell phone, and you text them congratulations when they win golf tournaments and do things well. And it really is, it's a family. And the future of this tour is bright. You know, it's when you're the best at what you do in the game of golf, I think other entities and organizations come at that and try to copy it. But the PGA Tour is the best, and it will be here many years. And my son's 10. He plays competitive golf now, so hopefully I'll be watching him play the PGA Tour one day. And I'm sure Commissioner Monahan will be moved on from now, but there'll be a new one that will be yelling at and barking at, and I'll watch the tour continue to grow, because it is a wonderful organization.
Mr. 600 this week, very, very cool milestone for Charles Howell III. And from one great story to another, you're looking at John Rahm with a young man named Phoenix. They met at the Shriners. Both John Rahm and Phoenix born with club foot. And this is a friendship that was born on that week. Rahm called him the strongest man he knows, invited Phoenix to play with John Rahm today at the WM Phoenix Open.
We've seen so many cool scenes on this hole, and this is just another one. I remember last year when John Rahm was kind of asked about how short his backswing was, and then went into a lengthy conversation about why, and it was because of the club foot, and he had to swing around that, and he couldn't rotate as much as some of the other guys in the game. So I can only imagine how this conversation got started, how this relationship got started, and how this young man is very, very lucky, and John is very, very lucky, because they have something in common. It's special.
Yeah, Phoenix was born with two club feet. Just how about this story and the perspective that John Rahm has? We talk so much about the golf swing and number one and the accomplishments on the golf course, but this aspect of charity and giving back, he just seems to fit that and check that box as well.
I talked about it earlier when we talked about it's easy to get focused in on the mechanical gifts that he drives the ball so well, the chipping, the putting. Everything he does is just amazing, almost like he's a machine. But inside, there is this thoughtful guy. We always think of Rory and Jordan when we think about introspection and the players who kind of go beyond the game and think in longer terms. John is like that. We just don't see it very often. But this is a great example of that. Again, I can only imagine how cool this conversation is for Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix enjoying every minute, soaking up the sun. And John Rahm, someone who came to this country, didn't know how to speak English, you know, went to Arizona State, became the best college player in the game, and now is the best in the pro game. But he does have a wider perspective. He appreciates the history of the game, and obviously appreciates the struggles of this young man, giving him something to smile about today.
Absolutely, and he can say, I got to world number one, and I started very, very similar to you. I figured out a way to swing around those disadvantages, and I became very good at what I did. And in John's line that he told us last year when he was explaining it, he looked at it as a gift. I wouldn't be the person I am now. I wouldn't be internally. I wouldn't be the athlete I am now had things played out differently. So this pep talk has got to be interesting.
Yeah, one of the great scenes, great moments here on a Wednesday at the WM Phoenix Open. It's John Rahm giving back to that young man. Well, folks, we're leaving the golf course, heading into the ring after the break. All the WWE fans want to stick around, because we've got The Miz joining us next. Get a little WrestleMania preview and talk some golf as well. On Golf Today, from anywhere near television over the last several years, you know The Miz, wrestler, WrestleMania 38 coming up, by the way, streaming exclusively on Peacock. He's also on that Miz and Mrs. show, season 3 coming up on USA. He's flying through the air, he's throwing people into the air, he's a big golfer, he's a big football fan. There's a story about him going to Pebble and making his wife mad, but look at that putting stroke, Rex.
That is a smooth stroke. And actually, he showed pictures of his swing earlier today. I need to find out what the handicap is.
It looks like he can ball. It looks like he can play this game.
There it is.
Here's the full swing now. Hits the ball a long way. He's got the big biceps, kind of like a modern Bryson or a Brooks. And the Miz joins us. Miz, it's great to see you. First of all, listen, I go back to like JYD, Junkyard Dog, WrestleMania 38 coming up on Peacock. Are you training for that? Are you doing some burpees, push-ups? What do you got going on?
I'm always training. You kidding me? I'm running. I'm actually going out golfing later on today because obviously you guys did not invite me to come to the Phoenix to take on, you know, Aaron Rodgers and your Emmett Smith. Like, I could beat them all, all right? Like, I could beat them all. You saw my swing. The only problem with my swing is when you give me a driver, I'm going to hit it 300 yards. You're just not sure where it's going to go.
Now, I have to ask, because I've gotten in similar situations in my past. I saw a video, I think Damon referenced it, about you going to play Pebble Beach, not telling your wife where you went. Actually, I think you told her you were shooting a commercial, and her finding out, watching you play the course live on TV. How did that play out? Like, what's the second sentence to what happened?
I mean, it wasn't really, I mean, I wasn't lying. It was more of a media day, and I was using it as media to promote everything that I'm doing. But yes, I did lie to my wife to go golfing at Pebble Beach. But I mean, wouldn't every guy do that? I mean, if you have an opportunity to play Pebble Beach, you play Pebble Beach at all costs. I don't care if you have kids at home, if you have anything, it's Pebble Beach. And by the way, wasn't invited to Pebble Beach for the Pro-Am. No murder there, but the Miz, nah, see you, bye.
Your profile's continuing to grow. We'll back you up, and I agree. If you got an invite to Pebble, you know, divorce or no divorce, you go play at Pebble Beach.
I had the exact same situation, played the Masters, the Monday after the Masters, Augusta National once. Didn't lie to my wife, but I told her it was our anniversary. It didn't go well, I can tell you that. I played Augusta.
All right, The Miz, how did you become a wrestler in the first place? Like, I mean, you just wake up one day and say, this is what I want to do. How did that seed get planted?
Growing up as a kid, my heroes were Ultimate Warrior, Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant. So when I was a kid, like, you never thought I could do it because these guys were 6'7", 300 pounds of pure solid muscle. But then once I got on a show called The Real World on MTV back like 20 years ago, it kind of took me out of this rut where I believed that I could do whatever I set my mind to. So then I set my mind to it. I said, I'm going to be a WWE superstar. So I went and learned the art of professional wrestling, went to acting school, improv school, basically tried to find all the tools I needed to become a WWE superstar. And years later, after all that training, all that hard work, all that sacrifice, I finally became a WWE superstar. And now I'm sitting here, the only two-time Grand Slam champion in the history of the company.
Now, this might be a stretch, but I read this morning about how you try to hyper-focus before a match to bring the best you have to that particular match. Is there any correlation to taking that same attitude to the golf course?
Oh my gosh, golf is one of the most difficult sports out there because to try to focus, imagine, I mean, that waste management tour, like, must be the hardest tour for any PGA. It must be the most fun, but to focus and lock in and engage, especially with the crowd being as loud as it gets, you can either feed off that energy or it can take you back. Me, I feed off of energy. I love an audience. I love being booed. I love being cheered. I love hecklers. So usually in those type of settings, that's where I do really, really well in. And the pressure, I'm a pressure player, so bring it on.
Oh, you'd fit right in here at TPC Scottsdale for sure. Now listen, my boss, Matt Haggerty, and I, we're part of a shred thread. We work out, we motivate our bros by posting our workouts. What's your number one workout, number one exercise that you do, whether it's pull-ups, push-ups, so I can kind of share that with my shred bros?
I'm all cardio, man. Like, honestly, wow. When you're in a WWE ring, you're doing 40-minute matches. I'm all about, you know, fast-paced cardio. So I'm on a treadmill, you know, doing, like, you know, 10 miles an hour, doing sprints, then slow down, then sprint, then slow down, then sprint, then slow down. Like, I do that for, like, 20 minutes, you know, on and off, really getting a good sweat in, getting my cardio up, and then that's where I go. After that 40 minutes, I'll usually go into a lot of heavy weight training because I got my cardio. Now I need to be able to lift these guys.
Man, awesome.
I don't see him.
It's all diet, by the way. Right now, I imagine you're probably eating a bunch of cheeseburgers and hot dogs and a bunch of burritos over there.
I'm a kale guy. I'm a kale guy. I like kale.
Oh, you're a kale? Okay, kale's good.
No, all right, good.
It's aggravating, trust me. You won't go out to dinner and eat any good
food. Now, rumor is it you are a Cleveland Browns fan.
Yes.
Big game this weekend. Who you got?
You know, anytime any team from the AFC North is in the Super Bowl and it's not the Browns, I am not rooting for them. People are like, but it's Cincinnati. They're in Ohio. You're a Cleveland guy. I'm like, yeah, exactly. I don't want them to win. I want them to lose because I wanted the Browns to be where the Cincinnati Bengals were supposed. Like, the Browns were supposed to be there this year. When I told everyone this year that the Browns were going to the Super Bowl, this was the first year that people said, didn't laugh at me. Like, they didn't say, oh, no, it's not going to happen. They're like, no, it could happen. But it didn't. Cincinnati wasn't supposed to be this good. They're not supposed to be in the Super Bowl. It's supposed to be Baker Mayfield and the Browns. But since Cincinnati is, I'm going for the Los Angeles Rams. I just think they have everything it takes to really do it. I don't think Cincinnati's offensive line is going to hold up against an Aaron Donald and a Von Miller. I just don't think it has what it takes. So I think they're going to get destroyed. I think watch the commercials, watch the halftime show. But the game, it's going to be 42-14. And Cincinnati will be lucky to get 14 points.
The Miz looking for a job on Football Night in America with Mike Tirico and Drew Brees with that analysis. Fantastic. And I wanted to put in a good word for you that you get to come to the WM Phoenix Open sometime in the future, buddy. Best of luck with WrestleMania 38 and the Miz and the Misses. It's going to be a great season 3 on USA. Thanks for the time, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you guys very much. Enjoy. Have fun out there.
Oh, you know we will. The Miz on a Wednesday. He's not happy about it. He wants to jump through the screen and hang out with the likes of Victor Hovland and Rex Hoggard.
And somehow we're on the wrong side of that. Somehow he's angry at us that he's not playing here. That's not good.
Absolutely. What a scene. The world number 3 on Pro-Am Day. We'll be right back. Back on Golf Today, we take a look at the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Ranking 6 through 15. Rex, how about these college seniors looking ahead, professional routes, just something to aim for, kind of tighten up their focus 1 through 5.
Such an opportunity for them. And look, we would have been talking about Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf just 2 years ago. So these guys are coming.
They are coming. A lot of these players, I imagine, we'll see one day here at the WM Phoenix Open. This has been our perch, buddy. I got a camera over there. I mean, can you believe this scene? One of the fans nice enough to give us some SPF 30 sunscreen.
It is beating down, and she was very nice. Not there anymore, but it was a very nice gesture. We're going to need more tomorrow.
I mean, I can't imagine how we have to pace ourselves, buddy. It's just Wednesday. We're just getting started here.
I think that's the advice of the week. Just pace ourselves, because we know this morning I was coming in, and a guy with a horse head ran by me, high-fiving me. It was 5:30 in the morning. I'm here for all of it.